Welcome to More to Come, PW Comic World's weekly podcast on graphic novel and comics publishing. I'll record it hither and yon this week. I'm Calvin Reed, a contributing editor at Publishers Weekly. Check us out online at publishersweekly.com/comics.
And I'm Heidi McDonald. I'm the editor-in-chief of The Beat at comicsbeat.com and also K Comics Beat at kcomicsbeat.com. And you can find us on Blue Sky at pwcomicsworld.bsky.social.
And I'm Kate Fitzsimmons. I'm the podcast producer, and you can find us online on Tumblr at PW Comics World.
And don't forget, if you're lucky, more to come will update on the Apple Podcast app. I actually think it did update. I'll have to recheck it, but sad to say, we're not getting consistent results. It's where you can also subscribe to
Spotify.
Spotify. I did
And also
90
our
now.
podcast feed on publishersweekly.com/comics.
Yes, if
You can get it direct from the
yes.
source.
You can get it
Yes.
at publishersweekly.com/comics. So yes, and on facebook.com/PW Comics, we're on Facebook.
And should you find us on a platform where you could leave a comment or a rating, give us a comment or a rating because we love to hear from our listeners. And we're sorry that the RSS, it's we've narrowed it down to our RSS feed issues. However, in this fallen world, technology is crumbling.
And we thank you for your perseverance. All right. This week on More to Come, huge Webtoon Disney packed. K-pop demons top the charts. Changes at Crunchyroll.
It's
AI
K-pop Demon
translation.
Hunters.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
You said K-pop demons.
Leave this in.
Oh. K-pop demon hunters top the charts. Changes at Crunchyroll, AI translation controversy, Archie digests are done, sad to hear, and angle and boycott. All right. Webtoon Disney.
Well, there have been lots of smaller deals, but this seems like it was the big deal, right, Kate?
Yeah. So in the past, there have been, like Warner Brothers was like, oh yeah, let's do like Batman Adventures on Webtoon or whatever. Like one or two comics from the two major publishers would end up packed with Webtoon. But now, I guess those experiments have satisfied because Disney has made a deal with Webtoon to run not one, not two, not six, but 100 different comics through Webtoon. A lot of these are back issues, reformatted, and some of them are brand new. But like 100, that's huge. That's
Well, I
like.
think, yeah, I mean, I don't even think it's the 100 number that's key here. I mean, I think you just glossed over some, not glossed over, but I mean, to me, what's huge about this deal is that they're also doing originals. Like, so basically Webtoon is, and listen, it's for Disney. So it's for Marvel, it's for Star Wars, it's for Aliens, it's for everything owned by 20th Century Fox. It's for the classic Disney characters. It's the gold mine. It's everything that the biggest franchises that you could possibly want. So what they're going to be doing is reformatting a whole bunch of, beloved Marvel, Disney, Star Wars, Disney properties for scrolling comics. But then they're also going to be creating new content as well. And I feel like when Warner Brothers and everybody was, everybody's been flirting with Webtoon format. And I use Webtoon as the generic term, but vertical scrolling to differentiate. Everybody's been flirting with it for the last few years. But this is kind of the oh yeah, we know this is the future type deal.
We can see, the continued migration of, Western comics to this platform. We've seen it with other indies, what Art Dark Horse, I guess Archie, we were talking about a little, which we will be talking about. IDW. So yes, an explosively popular platform is getting, more and more legacy comics. and turn
Yeah.
them into original comics.
Right. And I think part of, I mean, the fact they made such a big deal, and not just for original, I mean, original stuff's big, but the fact that they're trusting a lot of their back issues to it, stuff that they're already monetizing through Marvel Digital Unlimited, and that they are planning to monetize on Webtoon. Like they're saying, we
Yes.
will be, they're not going to be free. They're going to use their like coin system to monetize it. It says that they're looking at this model and they're, you know, seeing it. And I'm not going to lie, right? Like, I came into this through print. I love print, but where do I read my comics most days? I read them on, you know, Webtoon apps because it's just much more digestible on the device I happen to have in my pocket. And I'm excited for it.
I mean, one of the I heard from a few people about this deal, from my little, you know, peanut gallery of folks, and some people pointed this out as a global comics killer and a fatal blow for some of the other web, you know, digital comics platforms, because Global Comics had absolutely been trying, you know, they, Calvin, you just mentioned Dark Horse and so on, IDW. I mean, like Global has been offering their comics in the vertical scrolling format for a while, and you know, they have a pretty robust presence, so I don't know that it's going to kill them right away, but you know, this is a huge thing for Webtoon, and just as big for them is that it sent their stock price soaring. Okay, and we've been following that quite a bit, and they had also announced their second quarter financials that morning, and they seemed like they had staunched the flow because they had definitely been losing a lot of money, and or not losing a lot of money. Let me just say, like, they had not been showing a profit for a few quarters after their IPO last year.
Well, I mean, I don't honestly, I don't think it's going to be an anything killer because most people I know who read webtoons regularly have like five webtoon apps on their phone.
Right.
And it's not because it's not a subscription service, right? So it's not like, oh, well, if I have Hulu, I don't want to pay for Paramount Plus. Like, it's no skin off your nose how many apps you have. I mean, it's annoying, but it's not. I don't think it's going to kill anything, but I think it's going to really help Webtoon.
Well, that certainly is helping their invasion of North America. And I was, as I mentioned, you know, we're going to talk a lot about kind of K comics, manga, anime in this you know, kind of section of this podcast. But you know, I mentioned that after San Diego, I went to this kind of K content conference. It was a rights fair in Los Angeles, and you know, listen, we were talking about it quite a bit, and just, you know, Webtoon and Kakao do, Naver and Kakao, Webtoon and Tapas do remain these huge, two huge entities in Korea, but they are really, really eager to expand outside of Asia because the Asian market is saturated for them. So they are putting all of their efforts into expanding into Europe and North America with mixed results. And this is, you know, this is either, you know, I always say when Bone came to Scholastic, that was the thin end, the edge of the wedge for kids comics returning and triumphing in North America. So this might be that moment, or it might just be one of many, many fronts that Webtoon content is triumphing on. But yeah, we need to, you know, I think it's a realization on the part of Disney that this format is here to stay.
And it's a meaningful amount of comics, right?
Yes.
It's enough that like you could get basically all you can eat as much Marvel content as you want without ever like going over to Marvel Digital Unlimited. Like it's a whole separate model. It'll be interesting.
Well, it'll definitely be interesting to see these legacy comics on this, you know, this, and of course how they're reformatted and the quality of the reformatting. That's going to be interesting too. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't use the apps as extensively, obviously, as Kate, and I think, you know, people are really drawn to it. I kind of run to it here and there when I hear about something. So I'm just anxious to see how this plays out. But I think the flourishing of all of these apps is just an indication of how this is a real contested part of the market now. People want to be a part of it, or they certainly want to experiment and try to understand this new way of reading comics in North America.
Yeah, and honestly, like a lot, I think with previous digital comics models, there's a lot of cannibalization of people who are already in the audience. Webtoon is bringing in a lot of people, not just young people, but quote unquote casual readers who otherwise were not reading comic content regularly. It's really in the long run a boon to comics, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, as we get to, we have a lot of stories on this week's podcast that are just, once again, talking about the total evolution of the comics reading audience and being able to carry a newsstand in your pocket on your little pocket computer is a huge part of that. And so this is yet another brick in the wall for that.
And I meant
But
on the reformatting these comics also, the original comics that will come out of it. I'm really curious about how they're going to translate the visual style, because I mean we just have a generation that is more attuned to what would be considered a manga adjacent style, and are they going to bring American superhero comics or other kind of comics into this webtoon model?
well, I mean they are, right? But
Yeah, and they're doing it already,
if you
but yeah.
want an example of what it has looked like in the past, again, look at Batman Adventures. Like, it's very legible art style wise, both to like a webtoon audience and to a millennial and below print comic reader.
Are you are you are you wait, are you talking about Wayne Family Adventures?
Wayne Family Adventures. Yes,
Yes.
my
Well,
mistake.
that's what I thought you were talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I
I
knew, but
apologize.
I just wanted to, no, I just wanted to give it the
To
right title
clarify, yeah.
because it was very specific.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is very legible. I mean, yes, it's manga inflected, but it's manga inflected funneled through American art styles and is very much, readable and legible to, as I said, like millennial and below audience. And I would say we wouldn't necessarily even think about manga when we look at it. We're just like, oh, that's a fun cartoony type of art, right? It's a less serious art, more fun. And I think we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
For
But there's a
sure.
lot going on in the
Yeah.
webtoon industry back in Korea, where they are a huge, huge, huge part of the local economy, right, Kate?
Yeah, so Korea has a history of, at least in, the last couple generations, of really seeing the value in encouraging things they see as a source of soft power. Like famously, government gave a bunch of different incentives to the K-pop industry in its infancy to, really foster it, help it get off the ground. Well, clearly they're seeing some of that soft power potential in webtoons because they have passed a bill in their government. I don't know if they call it a Congress or what, but anyway, they've passed a bill called the Promotion of Comics Act, where they are going to be giving a 10 to 15% production cost tax rebate credit to producers of webtoons. So larger companies will get 10%, smaller companies will get 15%. Expenses covered under the act include quote unquote planning and production labor costs, licensing fees, and software costs, as well as indirect costs. While indirect costs like marketing or promotional will not be covered, but like the actual creation of webtoons, they're getting like 10, 15% back,
Yeah,
which is significant.
it's very significant. This is just part of what absolutely, you're right. It's a big supportive soft power. And like I'm saying, like, COCA, which is the Korean, I'm not going to do what the acronym stands for anyway. It is the kind of, national governmental agency that oversees kind of Korean cultural expansion, and they are directly supporting webtoons in other countries, which is a brand new thing. And this tax rebate is just part of it. They really feel that webtoons are part of the way to get Korean culture to, more influence, and to make it like manga and anime. They want it to be on the same footing with manga and anime. So this is part of that effort. And but meanwhile, back at the ranch, so I am reading the headlines from a Google Translate of this. I will say, if you want to know what's going on in the webtoon industry, you should read K Comics Beat, because that's what we are devoted to on there. It is the first and only, first and thus far only website devoted to news about webtoons and also other Korean culture elements. However, if you go on LinkedIn, there is a webtoon exec called Michael Song, and his newsletter and LinkedIn page is the absolute hottest goss and news. And so he linked to this. But back in Korea, Naver's six subsidiaries' collective bargaining agreements collapsed, citing wage and welfare discrimination. So there's a big strike against Naver, which is the or
One of the
at
two
least
big ones.
protest. Yes, it's the it is the owner of Webtoon. They are the parent company of Webtoon. And some of this has to do with Webtoons. According to the union, Naver Webtoon have signed a wage agreement that has a stock grant. Anyway, I again, this is translated, but there was a lot of concern back in Korea about working conditions for Webtoon creators. We've been talking about that for a while, and kind of global unrest over wage inequality, I guess you could file this under. So why is this important? Well, I'll tell you why it's all important. Because the biggest thing of the year, we were going to talk about Fantastic Four and Superman if we have time, but I bet you we're not going to have time. That said,
But we can't let this go by.
we can't let this go by, because it is absolutely the hottest thing this year. And both Disney and Marvel were, pushing Superman and Fantastic Four as kind of new IP. But the biggest thing is on Netflix. It is a movie called K-Pop Demon Hunters that has
Yeah, it was
been
created through
the
Sony.
it's study the number I'm reading the number one movie in America and 15 other countries at its 2 month mark, including South Korea, where K-pop has been number one since it came out, except for 1 week where it was number two for China Local, action pick. It is Netflix is talking about how huge this is. K-pop is now also the number two movie on Netflix Films all time list. And it
And
has
it's their number one animated movie ever.
ever, 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 ever. And what is interesting about this movie, and Kate, you've seen it. I haven't seen it. So I'm going to remedy that this weekend, because obviously I need to see it. But
Watch K-Pop Demon Hunters.
yes, of
Watch
course.
K-Pop
I'm looking
Demon.
at the
Well,
but
trailer now.
my staff, listen, my staff at the beat has been talking about it nonstop, but I finally got clued into what it was, and I was like, oh. Because with all this, Naver, Kakao, with these giant Korean companies attempting to really break through in the United States. And obviously we had Squid Game and K-pop, BTS. So obviously there are a lot of breakthroughs. However, they want to break through with some of their more webtoony content. Now, this was not created in Korea. It
Yeah,
was
so
created as you, yeah, go ahead,
it
Kate.
was
You
created
got it.
by a Korean American team
Yes.
through Sony. So one of the two director dash screenwriters is Korean American. All the songwriters are either, one way across the pond. Like either they're born in Korea, they've been working in the United States, or they're born in the United States, they've been working in the K-pop industry. The songwriters were K-pop trainees and have worked in the K-pop industry. It's very much like a cross-cultural diaspora product where it's not just like, but like deeply linked, right? It's not like people who are like Korean Americans who've never worked in Korea who just sort of know it from the product. Like these are people who have been in the K-pop industry who are making this movie, but they're making it for a global audience that may not be versed in the
Bingo.
details of K-pop.
Yeah, that is the key, be right there. Because listen, again, I was at this rights fair and some of the projects that they were pushing were to me, I'm like, I mean, look, I'm not a teenager and I'm not particularly well versed in their pace, but even I could tell they were like, I think that's gonna be a hard sell. So I think some of the projects that are they're trying to that Korean companies are trying to get to cross over are not they don't yet understand what American audiences want, global audiences want. So by having this, people who are cross-cultural say, hey, here's what Americans want. Here's the Korean K-pop aspect of it. Let's put it together. And then look,
Here's what K-pop does well that Americans will want, right? Like
yes.
we're
And
not going to
they,
like
because,
retroact. It's not like American Chinese food, right? Like
yes. But it's, listen, if I'm not mistaken, the story is about a girl band, K-pop band that fights demons, right?
yes.
Yes.
And
Okay.
I know
Well, I'm just going to
that.
say Josie and the Pussycats, all right? It's like this is not rocket science. This is a story that is time-tested, beloved. I would have watched it if I was a kid.
And of and
No-brainer.
what makes it extra good, of course, is that their enemies, their new big threat is a demon boy band out to
Yeah.
eat the souls of their fans.
And they're
And the
demonically hunky too.
oh, of course, well, that's intentional. Where the like how will they be able to lure their fans back away from the charms of the demon boy band out to eat their souls? And intentionally, they made sure that all of the Saja Boys, Demon Boy Band's songs are incredibly catchy. And then also, if you listen to them carefully, are about how, like, it could be a metaphor for love or it could be a metaphor for wanting to eat you. It's very fun. The songs are really good. And on their own, they are topping the Billboard charts. Huntrix, which is the girl band in the movie, and then also the sort of constructed vocal group of the lead songwriter, and then two other former K-pop artists singing with her as the other members of the group. Have now displaced Destiny's Child
Whoa.
for female groups in the top 100, Billboard top 100. They're not just doing well in the soundtrack charts, they are, or the, global music charts, they are topping the mainstream top 100 in the United States, which is
Yeah, it's a huge hit. It's a huge cross-cultural global hit, and
they're
it's
displacing the new Chapel Roan song for all things.
Yes. And so this is I this is a big story, and I'm still just digging into it to find out, how this is
The
going to
visuals are
affect.
really eye-popping, really
It's yeah.
dynamic. I've only seen the trailer, but I'm gonna do a deep dive myself.
It's beautifully made.
Yeah.
It's clearly a labor of love, right? It's not like something called K-pop Demon Hunters, made by people who didn't have a deep knowledge of the industry, could have been very cheesy and terrible. But instead, this is just a really fun thing, and well made. Like, I literally walking down the street yesterday, I saw a little girl with what was very clearly a tribute to the lead character's long purple braid, where her parents had braided like a like long piece of purple fake hair into her braid, and it was put up at the top of her head just like Rumi's hair. And I was just like, aw, they let her do cosplay hair for cosplay for K-pop Demon Hunters. Like, It's
It's
like
a
if
huge, it's a huge, and we're going to see, this is also one of those moments where the Hollywood, the conventional Hollywood entertainment industry is in complete disarray, aside from Netflix. This is a huge thing for Netflix. I mean, we should go
and
on to our
Sony
next
as
story.
well.
And Sony, but I mean mostly for Netflix, because no, Netflix is the industry leader that everyone is chasing at this point. And so
And
it's
it's proof that you can top the charts. You can have the biggest movie of the summer with original properties. You
yep,
don't need to go
that's the
back to the
yep,
mines.
brand spanking new. Brand spanking
And just
new.
another measure of just how popular, Asian pop is, the K-pop in particular, but really, I mean, it's transforming American storytelling. It has been for a while.
Well, on that note, actually, Crunchyroll is the huge, gigantic, gorilla, 800-pound gorilla in the room for anime outside of Netflix. Crunchyroll and Netflix are the streaming leaders in anime, and they are also having some ups and some downs. They have a deal with Delta now, right? That they'll be showing Crunchyroll on
Right.
airplanes.
So it could be a hopeful sign, right? But it's happening at the exact, literal exact same time that Crunchyroll has announced huge layoffs.
Ha. It's always the way.
Let's put it this way. They have the scope of their layoffs have not been determined, according to Variety, but they are rumored to be real big because they want to change their focus to be more international and not so heavy in the United States market. At the exact same time that they announced also they had this deal with Delta where people could watch Crunchyroll on flights, both international and domestic. So this may be both a way of bringing in more money, because I imagine Delta's paying them for this, but also maybe trying to get a way of promoting knowledge of their brand to international travelers who may, spread the word and get interested in Crunchyroll. Anecdata, this is not proven, but online I'm seeing a lot of buzz over the last like week, 2 weeks, that people who used to get like one or two ads on their like semi-paid tier, right, where you pay but you get less but you get ads, are getting more and more ads. Like they're like, how many more ads could the free version have? I get so many ads on the paid version. So it seems to me that between that and the layoffs and the Delta, although the ads thing again, anecdata, it could be that Crunchyroll is trying to slim things down in order to bring in a little more money. Which, I mean, businesses have to do occasionally, but it's interesting the ways they're trying to do it, and it's interesting that they are targeting new markets outside the United States to try to promote their service. And to be fair, Crunchyroll has, like, Netflix may be more popular, but Crunchyroll has more anime than anybody. Like, if you want an anime streaming service right now, they're it because they ate Funimation.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, we talked about it at the time
Yeah, I'm
when
just bringing it
Warner
back up
Brothers.
in context.
I mean, we talked about it at the time about how stupid it was for Warner Brothers to get rid of Crunchyroll when they were trying to get into streaming. I mean, Warner Brothers has just been, they lucked out that they created some really great movies this year, because otherwise, so many of their decisions have been really stupid over the last little while. So anyway, but not all is not well. I mean, look, all of this just tells us that the manga, anime, K-pop style is the predominant style for this kind of material, for animated material, and increasingly comics. I'm not saying that Occidental comics are going away, but it's just we need to be aware of what makes manga so compelling to the people who
Right.
love it,
I think,
and a
as
lot of
witness,
people still don't understand.
well, what we were saying earlier, I think not all, but a large chunk of comic creators and comic audiences, again, millennials and below, have been imbibing manga since the manga boom of the late 90s.
Yes.
early 2000s, and it's informing people's art organically from the start. And I think that's all to the good because there have been some comics that are like I would say mainstream superhero comics of the late 90s, early 2000s. There were some of them that did feel very hothouse and insular, where they could use some outside influences. It's healthy to have artistic cross-pollination, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's still some problems in anime and manga land.
Yep.
So we just ran a big story on The Beat, written by Matias Sila Piedra, who has really been doing an awesome job on our coverage. And he just talks about how generative AI is being used for translation. We talked about Imaki and Orange, how they were using AI, and they look, to their credit, they were being upfront about it, and they were saying they were using AI, but then having humans come in and fix the AI. But now it's been realized that Viz is also using some of these AI translations, and fans are really just, they want transparency on this. They want to know when it's being used. I mean, to me, it's like if it's crappy, that's one of the reasons, one of the signs that AI is being used. Because if you just do an AI translation and then plop it in, it's awful, as we know from using Google Translate, which is AI. Sorry, peeps. But yeah, it's a big
So
continuing issue.
Viz was crediting their AI assisted translation, as per the article on the Beat, was crediting them, quote unquote, as provided by Shogakukan, which is one of the big Japanese publishers, which owns Imaki. So they were not saying it was from Imaki. They were not saying it was from AI. They were saying, oh, it's from Shugakukan, and then just not mentioning it was from Shugakukan's AI. And people noticed. People noticed. I mean, fans know. There's a reason why when fans are doing like early translations of raw subs, they prefer things that have been translated by humans. They will pay to get the version translated by humans as opposed to the one that some pirate threw into an AI. Because it's just better.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. I mean, we've talked before. And, as a matter of fact, one of the stories that we had in our story list this week was that Sophie Castile Award nominees have been announced for translation. And guess what? Good translation makes good comics, I mean, we know Helga Daschler, who does a lot of the French to English translations, is huge. And it's a real art. And you look, I mean, I just read an Google Translate of a story. It's good for quick, dirty, here's sort of kind of what it says, but you just can't use it straight from the AI and expect it to be readable
But
and good,
well,
because it's not. So
the Beat article really does illustrate that this is a topic that's going to take constant monitoring, by like your reporters, Heidi, as well as fans, and these are certainly a universe of fans energized about how this is creeping in, and it's not going to go away. The publisher's going to constantly looking for cost cutting ways. And in that sense, I guess in some ways, the mammoth manga category, and the ability to get this stuff delivered to a very eager fan base. I mean, we're going to have to be monitoring for this kind of translation, bypass as we go forward.
Yeah. And
All of this
it's, as I said,
together.
it's very short-sighted because any pirate can throw it into AI and does. The advantage the publishers in the United States have, other than just, let's help the artists, is that they actually have good translations.
Yeah, totally. And so anyway, there's also some really great coverage on this at Broken Frontier. And I will say the Beat story got a lot of attention on social media platforms. So obviously there's a lot of concern about this out there. And we're sure to be talking about it again because it's not going away.
No.
Well, one thing that is going away is one of the most venerable traditions of comics, which is the Archie Comics Digests, which is a 50-year-old format. Now, as I mentioned in my coverage, I did not read Archie Comics as a kid. Did Kate, were you into Archie?
I was not into it. Like, I'd read it from time to time, but
Yeah.
my like kid grocery store comic were Harvey Comics.
Yes.
But I was aware of it. It was always there. And even as a kid, I was like, how is this still around? Like, it's
Right.
great and all, but how is this still here?
I read them all. I read Harvey's, I read Archie's,
Yeah. So you were an Archie kid, you were an Archie Comics reader, so you
Yeah, I
know
mean, you
them.
couldn't avoid him. I mean, Archie has always been there.
It
And I was
has,
an
but
omnivorous consumer of all kinds of comics, so they were part
that
of my comics diet for sure.
so they I know my parents or my family got me some Archie comics when I was a kid, and I did not like them, and that was it. I didn't read them again. I did watch Josie and the Pussycat. Okay. Josie and the Pussycats. I mean, come on, that was, we're
Now,
showing our age here. But just to show, as you know, listen, Calvin is retired and he grew up reading Archie Comics. This is what I'm trying to get
that's
at.
because I'm
This
old.
is,
Yeah. Been around for
it's
a
been
long
a, it
time.
is an
They're
American
believe it.
tradition.
Now, I
Yeah.
didn't have all of the various, new iterations of Archie, like Superhero Archie and all of that. I was reading like, hijinks, in Riverdale,
That's
and
what most of them still are.
Betty and Veronica, battling it out over,
Yeah, it's a throuple. Get with
yeah.
it. Archie, Betty, Veronica are a
And of
throuple.
course, fan favorite Jughead. What's he up to
Yes. Yeah. I'd read, and his burger loving. Yeah, they're American icons.
now? I didn't read the digest that often, but and I would read them if I got them, but this is a venerable format for it to go away, and it's always been profitable, but
Well, or has
maybe
it?
not.
So, I mean, as a Manhattanite, I don't really go to grocery store checkout aisles very often. I'm about to go on vacation in Maine, so I am going to check it out for sure. You have to pay for those pockets. Like when you are checking out and you see Woman's World and, Best Crossword Puzzles and The Secret of Princess Diana, which, yes, they still do these topics as old as time. Those pockets are paid for. You have to pay a premium. So Archie Comic Digests have been in these really premium, expensive racks for a long time. And the idea was that they were, a reward for the child or a crying child. Give them this comic book and they will be silent in the back seat for a bit. It is a classic and Kate, like you're wondering, how is this still around? I mean, I'm
I was a
sure.
kid then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like as a even I'm sure today's children also look at these and are like, these are old, but I have nothing else to do, so I'll read them. Because it but anyway, the news that we're circling around here, we haven't talked about Archie very much of late, and they are one of the last, Marvel, DC, and Archie are the oldest comics companies out there. So they had put out their solicitations for the August shipping project, and they had like three or four digests in there, and then they put out a new solicitation. So it looks like the traditional digest format is going away. They are going to do seasonal, like larger size. It doesn't say what the size is exactly, so I'm very curious to see that. And they will be half the price, half the size, like 96 pages as opposed to like 180 pages, and the same price, $9.99. And they will have comics, and then they will also have puzzles, which are apparently incredibly popular at the checkout stand. People love crossword puzzles, word search puzzles, all those puzzles. I don't know about Sudoku anymore, but pardon me, they love the puzzles. So this is a very different format, and it's really the end of a tradition, an era, you name it. It's
Well, it's sort of depressing. I mean, as you reminded me, Hart, maybe I remember covering the revival of Archie in the 2010s as they moved into the graphic novel market. They moved into new genres for Archie and the gang. It really had revived the whole brand across the line and into the book market. And so it's really kind of unfortunate to hear that we seem to have lost. I seem to have lost track of where the company is now.
Well, but at the same time, they may have seen this coming, which is why they were trying so hard in the 2010s to try to get into the regular graphic
Oh
novel
yeah.
market,
Oh,
to
definitely.
try to diversify beyond just the digest, because the digest's time may have come.
Including their foray into the TV market. You know,
Yeah,
the Riverdale series.
Riverdale started
Very
airing
successful.
in 2017, so not quite 10 years ago, actually. It seems like a lot longer ago, doesn't it?
It does. It
Wow,
does. Well, the
it
whole
really does.
the book format revolution for them did begin a lot further
Yeah.
back than that too.
Well, it really goes back to Kevin Keller when they introduced the first gay character in Riverdale, and it was written by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, who really was this Archie loving playwright who came to comics and kind of shook things up. I mean, they definitely had, I'm trying to see when Kevin Keller debuted, because that would definitely be the start of the Archie sauce.
Hopefully, the Archie Mary series,
Yes,
which
our
was a
Archie
book
Die Junkhead
series,
came out as
where Archie
asexual,
marries
and he
Veronica, Archie marries Betty, and they had different narratives. He worked, he went to work in the lodge businesses. The other one, he travels to New York to become a singer songwriter, and live in a garret. And those hugely popular, really like reconfigured the brand. And it was a real graphic novel focused series.
Kevin Keller debuted in 2010.
Yeah.
So, so only
Sure. Yeah.
15 years ago, but it does seem like another world for some reason.
Yeah, and then it was followed by Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which also got made into a TV. Yes.
Right. So yeah, there was a huge Archisauce. Hey, by the way, also, this is absolutely, I mean, I say absolutely, almost likely tied in a bit to the Diamond situation as well, because
Yeah, of
Diamond was
course. Oh yeah, it is. There's a
their
connection.
direct market distributor and so on. So there could be some stuff there. And but they were the last of the newsstand comics, and we will see what happens with them, and what goes on with the newsstand. But yeah, definitely, if I had time and I didn't have to do the beat every day, I would just write a history of new of mass market comics in the 21st century, because people are always like, oh, if only we could have comics on newsstands, they'd be safe comics. First off, comics don't need to be safe.
Yeah.
Second, newsstands are not where it's at, baby.
No.
And look at what they're up against, and
Yeah.
that
I
is
grew
not
up buying comics from newsstands, but that market
same. Yeah, we
gone.
all did. Kate, you did too, right? Did you
Not
get,
really.
where
I
did you
mean,
get?
occasionally I would be surprised to find a comic in the newsstand and be like, oh, cool. But like, honestly, I first, aside from the occasional Harvey comic, basically, I picked them up at bookstores in graphic novel form, and I was like, there are clearly floppy versions. How do I get them? And found comic book stores.
There you go.
I did not get into them through the newsstand because, like, I'd occasionally see one on the newsstand, but it'd be like some really random comic, and it would be like, whatever.
Well, Calvin and I are old, so we got them on the
So we've
newsstands. But we're not so old that we don't realize that they are other ways to get into comics these days. So we're perfectly happy with new generations finding them on new
We've seen the
platforms.
evolution of the marketplace, and
So
a better world now.
Yeah, so another story, Dean Simons at the Beat wrote a really great story summing up a situation that has been going on for quite a while in France at the Angoulême Comics Festival. Basically, there is a huge outpouring of anger at Frank Bondeau, who is this kind of jerk who has been running the festival for quite a while. And about 10 years ago, I think it was 2017, there was a huge scandal where he was really, putting down women cartoonists and just in the most chauvinistic fashion possible. And but somehow he survived that and continues to run Angoulême. And apparently, I have not seen there is no English language version of this, but apparently there was a sexual assault at the festival in 2024, and it was not handled properly. And of course, this has quite rightfully created a lot of anger against Bondo. And now authors, because that's just, the most horrible part of really just kind of his daughter is taking over, nepotism, you name it. He's they're doing it. But authors are standing up and saying we will not go to the show, and they are saying they're going to boycott the 2026 version of the show unless Bondo and his company are removed.
And
And
also, if I
this
may
is.
point out, Heidi, in your same Beat story, which I found very interesting, there is an attempt to restructure the ownership character of the festival. It seems to also be upsetting artists. I mean, it's a nonprofit now, and Bondo seems to be presenting a new way, a new restructuring that would take that away. And that seems to be terrifying everybody that's involved.
Well, the structure of Angoulême, as I understand it, is that there are three parties that administer that are involved in running the event. First is the city of Angoulême, and as I understand it, Angoulême was kind of this backwater manufacturing town, and at some point back in the 70s, they're like, hey, this comic stuff is big. Let's have a festival here. That'll put us on the map. And they were right. So they decided to make this festival their signature event, and they succeeded at it. So there is the town, and then there is a company that is the festival that kind of plans the the guests and the exhibits and the shape of the show, the content of the show. And then, however, those two have hired another company that's kind of the show runner, which is Ninth Art, which is the company run by Frank Bondeau. And so that is, like I said, the show runner that puts on the festival and actually makes the decisions about how to do it. And so you have these three entities. And it's a three-legged stool, so with all the pressures distributed evenly, it kind of got along. But it seems like Ninth Art is trying to take, as Kate alluded to, is trying to take over more of the content of the show, and a lot of authors are alarmed. Among the authors who have signed this petition, who are threatening to boycott Chris Ware and everybody, really, all of the big names of international comics.
Over
And really showed
2,000
about
names on the petition.
over 2,000 names. So there is a lot of outrage over this. And Chris Ware, Posy Simmons, Art Spiegelman, Emil Ferris, Alice Bechdel, Ben Catcher, Uli Lust, Joe Sacco, Trondheim, Fab Caro, you name it, the 2,000 creators. And the show is about the creators. So if they really do boycott, this could be quite a show. And I'll say this. The French love drama. Oh, I've been lucky enough to go to Angoulême three or four times. And there's always some drama involved in the show that is, kind of sometimes very rooted in reality, and other times maybe just a little mountain of out of a molehill type thing. This is the real deal. Frank Bondeau must go.
No, look, he was, but if I'm not mistaken, I went in 2016, and he was behind an awful scandal. His remarks alone, which obviously make you consider how is he managing this beloved show, are just Beyond the pale. So yeah, he's been a problem for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Trouble at Angoulême. And there is definitely more to come on that story because this is a very long running situation. So we have a few minutes left, you guys. Let's just talk about the summer of Superman and Fantastic Four because we've all seen all three of them, right?
I have not seen Superman. I will tomorrow
It's
once it comes on streaming.
okay.
But
All right. Oh, you.
I have seen K-Pop Demon Hunters and I have seen Fantastic Four.
Okay.
I've seen Superman and Fantastic Four.
I've seen Superman and Fantastic Four, but not K-Pop Demon Hunters.
Yeah,
But
I haven't seen K-Pop Demon Hunters,
yeah, I
but
mean,
I
see
plan
Superman in the
to.
theater. It's so good. I'm
I plan
surprised.
to see it.
Anyway, it's really, really good. But I give Superman 10 thumbs up. I had no notes. I loved it. I loved all. I even loved Guy Gardner. I complete love. Calvin, what was your thoughts, Calvin?
Oh, you know what? I think both of these movies, I mean, I don't have a sense of one of, one being dramatically better than the other. I love them both in their own ways, even though I have a little nitpicky things to say about both of them. But both of these movies, they came along at such an interesting time. In far as the movie side of DC and Marvel and how they are approaching. I mean, I thought Superman, I like Superman. I'm not as crazy about what's the actor's name? Cornsweet.
Corn sweat.
He's a you know, I his the there were things I didn't like about it, but I thought it was timely. I love the secondary characters. Obviously everyone talks about Mr. Terrific. I love them too as a character. My the only thing I was troubled by was the and should we let people know that there's spoilers?
Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler,
Spoilers are
spoiler.
coming if you're not gonna go if you are listening.
I mean, Kate, are you okay with
I'm
spoilers?
fine. I don't care.
You don't care.
Listeners, if you don't want to hear spoilers, stop now.
The transformation of Superman's Kryptonian parents from benevolent to essentially alien invaders. I found that troubling, but I will admit it added a dimension to the narrative that was pretty impressive. Fantastic Four, it's interesting to me. It's almost like a cult classic in comparison with Superman. I mean, Superman, named Fantastic Four is beloved, but it's not Superman. Still, this is certainly the most effective reimagination of the comic book that we've seen of the what? How many have been? This is the fourth version. And I've come to I like the characters. I like Pascal, who I didn't like as a with the casting at first, but I think he does a great job. Love what they did with Sue Storm and her impact on the story overall. And I think they gentrified Ben Grimm a little bit, but the spirit of the character, and I think that for me in the whole movie, they tried to get the spirit of the Fantastic Four, and I thought they got it more than any of the other versions. So I'll shut up now.
No, I was just going to say, I felt like this was the first Fantastic Four I watched where they felt like adults.
Very
Like,
much so,
even
yeah.
if the actors weren't as young as they were playing in previous ones, it was very, it felt very like young adult, like very. Whereas Fantastic Four has always been like the grown-up superheroes in the group, right? Like they're not the chaos of like X-Men or something. Like they've got their own chaos, but it's because they're wacky. It's not because they're young and dumb.
So you thought
And
that,
they captured that.
you think that just that Vanessa Kirby seemed more youthful than Jessica Alba?
No, I'm saying she seemed less so.
Oh, okay,
That's what I'm saying.
right.
Jessica
Okay,
Alba at all felt like too young. Whereas in this
right. Okay,
one,
got it, got
they
it, got it,
felt
got it.
like, yes, these are wacky people. It's not, they're not like, oh, look how young and girlish and like high school. It didn't feel as inexplicably high school as some other performances and versions had been. Like they were written with respect. But yeah, I do feel like Ben Grimm took a back seat in this version, hopefully, if they do a sequel, he gets more to do.
I thought
Well,
they did.
I,
Oh,
you
go
know,
ahead. Excuse me. Go ahead, Heidi.
I mean, he was good, but there wasn't.
Yeah.
Rob Liefeld is a big Marvel hater, so he's just been doing nothing but dunk on the movie nonstop. But I gotta say, he had one tweet that was pretty hilarious. It was, and I am paraphrasing, but it was like, the thing doesn't need to fight. Let him crush garlic. That's the thing I know. And I'm like, we see the thing obsessing over pasta making and being, domestic, and we do not get to see indeed the thing. I did not like it as well as either of you, because I think with both Superman and Fantastic Four, I saw the gears of the studio machinery churning in each one of them. And I of course been following both Warner Brothers and Marvel Disney for years and years. So with Superman, I saw the studio once again pinning all their hopes on a DC movie in order to catch up with Marvel. I mean, it's like old school reference. It's like Dick Dastardly trying to win wacky races. They've been trying for so long to catch up with the MCU that MCU actually got old, and their axle broke, and they're by the side of the road. So they didn't have as much catching up to do. But and despite all this pressure and anxiety on the part of the studio, I do feel James Gunn was able to make his movie. And when you see these new characters, Supergirl, Mr. Terrific, Guy Gardner, Hawkgirl, you're like, I want to know more. I want to see more. Or okay, with Fantastic Four, the same amount of gear grinding because the MCU is in turmoil. I'll just say this. They cut out a whole opening scene based on or inspired by Alex Ross, who, by the way, Alex Ross inspires this whole freaking movie. Like, if Superman is based on All-Star Superman by Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison, then Fantastic Four is totally Alex Ross based. Okay. But they cut out a scene that introduced John Malkovich as the Red Ghost, and the scene was called Ape Fight. It was to show the Fantastic Four battling apes in a free-for-all, and they cut that out.
I hope they put it on the
And
DVD because,
they
like,
freaking
why get rid of it?
better. Yeah, why
Yeah.
did you think I mean, I don't know. Like, the director's cut of this movie is going to be so much more interesting to me. Like, and to me,
Most likely.
that's, for what, maybe they thought it was too silly or was too, they don't like Reed's stretching abilities. They say they look, disturbing or something on screen. And I don't know, James Gunn took chances as best he could. This Fantastic Four to me took no chances. And I think that's why it just felt so constrained, and everything was like, oh, is this going to work for the toys? Are we going to be able to do this for the movie studio? So I don't
I
know.
can
That's me.
understand
I
that.
understand people like
I can
it, but it's
understand
a,
that from a
yeah.
Doylean as opposed to Watsonian perspective, right? Like, if you pay attention to all the studio gear grinding, you can watch it through that perspective, and that's totally valid. As someone who could, like, some part of my brain was kind of guessing at that kind of stuff going on in the background, because I will say this about both Superman and Fantastic Four. These are both products of studios saying, we want to do something with a slightly different sensibility. Like, something about the sensibility we have is not working. And they both experimented with these.
Well, listen, I mean, Fantastic Four, I want to get the art of book, except it costs $150. So I'm gonna call in those all my favors on that one, because it looks great. The movie looks great. And I actually was talking on Blue Sky with Tom tomorrow, and he was like, oh, I don't know if I should see this movie. And it's like, Tom, you need to see this movie because it's your wheelhouse. If you like mid-century decor porn, Fantastic Four is absolutely for you. I have a question real fast. What did you guys all think of the gender switching for Silver Surfer?
Well, that's not a gender switching. That's a specific pre-existing Marvel character who was a
Yeah,
female Silver
I knew
Surfer.
there wasn't a
He was
female
already
character,
around.
so it
Yeah,
didn't
but
bother me, and I thought they
I
did the
just,
character well.
right. I feel that they switched. Even though you're correct, it was Shalabal, Ball, who is an existing character, they absolutely did give her Norrin Radd's motivation, because in the movie, there's the scene where they flash back to her home planet, and in, like
Yeah.
what she gave up to
Yes.
become, she gave up, she sacrificed her life to save her planet. Pretty no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. But they show her with her daughter, as opposed to with, Norrin Rad was with Shalabal, that was his love interest.
I
And
have a
he gave
question
up the
here.
love of his
Yeah, I do
life.
have a
And to
question.
me, I just wanted, before you get to that, I just want to say real quickly, to me, that is exactly what, like, the MCU just shies away from anything that has to do with romance. And to
Well, but
me,
no, they didn't do it for that reason. They did it so that they could bring a romance plot. Like, basically, I think they picked a female silver surfer. She's not a gender swap, but they did pick a female Silver Surfer because they wanted to have the dynamic between her and Johnny.
yes, that is
Because that
correct.
is sort of the doomed romance of the movie.
I'm just curious.
Well, I
Not
and I
quite
throw
romance, but
something. Can I throw
it's got
something out
vibes.
there?
Go on, Calvin.
It's not as substantial as what you guys are talking about, but I'm just curious. The uniforms, the Superman uniform and the Fantastic Four uniform, I did not like what they did with it. I don't like bringing the red undies back. I really didn't care for that too much. Plus, it's just poorly designed, poorly fitted on them. The boots look awful. The Fantastic Four, it was okay. It was
You
okay.
know what, though? I
The
say
John
this.
Byrne version is not my favorite of the uniform.
They had the corn sweat costume at San Diego Comic-Con, at the DC booth. They had it in a glass case. And when I saw the costume, I thought, that's a good man. I don't know why the costume just looked wholesome to me. Maybe it was the red underwear on the outside, but just
It looked like a
no,
Steve Reeves
it looked
version of it to
wholesome.
me.
It was
I watched that
wholesome.
on TV back in the day.
I think he was wholesome.
Well, I certainly, it might not be the best fitted, but I will
You
say I
think?
still prefer it to the Snyderverse one, which made Superman look scary, and Superman should not look scary.
That
I'll
is
but I
correct.
like the Henry Cavill Superman much better, but that's fine. Kurzweil does a very good
Oh.
job. He's the corny guy from Smallville, and he does it well.
So Calvin is a Snyder bro. Wow, you learn
Oh
things
yeah,
every day.
I did. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
Oh, wow.
but there you go.
All right.
Well, that was the summer of 25.
Yes. All right.
Kate, I do look forward to seeing your reactions to Superman now that it's been completely spoiled for you. So,
I spoil everything. Don't worry about it.
yeah, I know. And I, anyway,
Okay.
I can never enjoy anything fully anymore, so because of that. But anyway, that was the summer of 25, but it's not the end, because as always, there will be
More
two
come.